Hello, podcast listeners. This is Tony Heil, and before we get into the whole podcast with my introduction and a great conversation with Maryland Delegate Robin Lewis, I just want to let you know that some of the sound quality on this particular episode may not be the best, and that's because I spend $0 on this podcast, and this is all for just encouraging more political participation. And in order to get this done quickly and got on schedule, I had to record this in my car, and so here it is. But please listen through. I think the conversation with Robin Lewis is terrific, and everyone should really pay attention to what's going on in Baltimore and in Maryland, and why you should get involved in politics, and of course, why you should run. Please listen, subscribe, and I hope you enjoy. Thank you. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the You Should Run podcast. I'm your host, Tony Heil, council member in Bridgeport, Pennsylvania, nestled between Norristown and King of Prussia, which is famous for its mall and many other things. We're close to Philadelphia, and another city that's not too far from Philadelphia that's kind of in the news a lot lately is Baltimore, Maryland. And I am excited today to have my first guest from Maryland, a delegate, one of the few states that has a delegate system, I believe, Robin Lewis, to talk about her experiences running, or being in office, and what that means, and why you, listening, should run for office, too. Before we get into our discussion, I would just like to remind everyone to look at some of our past episodes from people from Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, Massachusetts, Missouri, Montana. And if you have any guests you'd like to see on here, or you're interested in seeing something, please email me, Tony Heil, TonyHeil at gmail.com. All that in mind, Delegate Lewis, thank you for joining the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Councilman. It's great to be here.
How does it feel to be a delegate? It sounds so formal.
Well, if it's any indication, I literally just ran through a rainstorm to hop on the bus to get back home in time to talk to you. So the level of glamour, I'd say, is a 2 out of 10, but the rewards are immeasurable. I feel that being in any public office is an honor, and it's actually, at this moment in American history, incredibly important. So I'm humble. I take the bus and I ride my bike because I'm car free by choice. So I'm very humble. At the same time, I realize I am invested with an enormous responsibility and duty to serve and protect my constituents. And that makes me feel great.
Well, that's terrific. I hope that your constituents listen to this and hear that. Now, you talk about this moment in history. Have you always been politically minded?
Well, that's actually kind of a tough question because on the one hand, I've always been aware that formal politics with a capital P existed, but I never imagined myself holding elected office. Over the course of my life, you know, I listened to my parents and older relatives talk about politics. When I was in college in the 80s, I was very aware of political movements like the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa. I remember students building shanty towns on the quad. You know, I was very aware of these things. When I was in college, I joined with a couple of friends of mine, took a Greyhound bus across country to march against the Contras when Ronald Reagan was president. So I've had an awareness of politics. I've had a sense of responsibility to participate in civic life. Actually, going back even further, I think my first memory of anything political was holding my parents' hands, walking along Lake Michigan, the beach near our home in Miller Beach outside of Gary, Indiana, because there was a protest against, if I remember right, the construction of a nuclear power plant somewhere along the coast of Lake Michigan there. I remember being with my parents and being a little kid. So, yeah.
That's a lot.
I know that politics exists, but I never sought or planned to seek elected office. I'm in this role, this very important and honorable role right now, precisely because of what happened on November 8th, 2016, I've sort of stumbled into this position, but the timing was perfect for someone like me who gives a hoot and who is unafraid to tell the truth, could step up, serve, and protect people who are at risk of all of the horrible things that are being done thanks to the person who's in the White House right now.
Well, the person who's in the White House, and we can say who has no name if you want, but, you're from Baltimore area, right?
No, I was born in Gary, Indiana.
But, I mean, you are...
I was born in Indiana, grew up in Chicago, moved to Baltimore as an adult. I've been here almost 20 years.
And so, it's been in the news. We were going to talk a week ago, and then Baltimore became in the news because... the person in the White House started trashing Elijah Cummings and the city. And I imagine as a local elected official, this wasn't a fight you were expecting to see for your area, was it?
Yeah, of all the things to worry about in the world right now, I was not expecting to have to join in a pitched battle against the person who's in the White House right now. I mean, there's so much going on in the world. He's courting the friendship of dictators like Kim Jong-un and Recep Erdogan in Turkey. I never imagined that he'd turn his sights on our little town. I never imagined that we would get this kind of attention from that person. But here we are. It's actually perfect because Baltimore is a hidden gem. It is a city of grit and creativity. It's also the object of all kinds of misunderstanding and hatred. And I suppose after he's, made love to Kim Jong-un, it was inevitable that he'd turn his sights closer to home and recognize that, oh my gosh, here's another helpless puppy that I can kick. Let me just attack Baltimore City. So here we are, but we're ready for him. This city has been through a lot worse than that man. And one of the things that's happened in the past week since you and I first scheduled this call was after his attack, people of Baltimore rallied together. There's nothing like a crisis to bring people together. And we decided to stand up and defend ourselves. The hashtag #WeAreBaltimore is trending. I know it's been hijacked by some right-wing trolls out there in the social media sphere, but it's a call that we've rallied around, and that's forced us in a good way to reckon with our challenges as well as our treasures. And I delight in standing up for this great city that I now call home and that I love.
And I've spent very little time in Baltimore. I've driven through it, as I'm sure many people in the Northeast corridor have when they're going south to DC or whatnot, but it's called Charm City, right?
Yeah.
So why, and it is crazy to see someone love Kim Jong-un, who's murdering his own people, and then crapping on Baltimore, which, Baltimore's a great city, right?
Yes, absolutely. It's, of course, it's a great city. It's an American city. All of our cities are amazing. Baltimore City is just celebrated its 290th anniversary. We've been here a long time, and even before that, when the Europeans settled here, even before that, Native Americans used the harbor of Baltimore as a place for, all sorts of activity, economic and social. This place has been around a long time, and we'll be here after that man has slunk off into the sunset or the lava pit or wherever he's going, because this is a city grounded in grit and creativity. This is a city of builders and makers. We have our trials and tribulations, but, we're working through them. All we really want and need from the President of the United States is a helping hand when we ask for one. And when he took office, actually, he and I took office within about a week of each other. I was sworn in on January 10th. He was sworn in on January 19th in 2017, the both of us. And all that we really need from him is what he promised when he took office, which was funding for infrastructure. And instead of providing that, he has, you know, participated in all sorts of nefarious acts that undermine our efforts to repair the struggles, the wounds and the struggles of our past and build a better future. So, you know, I don't know, Tony. I don't like talking about him very much. I realize that it's timely, it's trending, but there's so much more important than an eighth grade, you know, bully picking on a struggling city. It's almost so unserious, but you know, what can I say?
Well, instead of talking about
this, we're used to being picked on, and we're used to standing up for ourselves, and we'll keep doing that.
Yeah, instead of just focusing on that, Baltimore and Philadelphia have similar identities in terms of, like you said, grit is an important word, and I think there's a number of cities like that. You know, in Philadelphia, if you play for the Eagles or the Sixers or the Phillies, the fans care that you have fight in you even more than they care about your stats. Now, do you find that as an elected official representing a place like Baltimore, that your constituents, they care about your style as much as they do about what you do?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, Baltimore and Philadelphia have a lot in common, not just their origin stories, but also in their architecture, in their topography. These are both cities situated on important waterfronts. But we have a similar sort of, you know, gritty Rust Belt history, and it shows in the way we think about ourselves, the way we behave, and the pugnacious sort of attitude that we take to the rest of the world, particularly the other glossier cities on the East Coast. Mike's constituents, what they want, as best I understand it, is someone who is honest, has integrity, who is transparent, who understands their day-to-day lives and struggles, and who works diligently and relentlessly to improve the conditions of their lives. No one here is looking for a savior. Everybody here is looking for an ally they can trust. I think that's true in Baltimore. I'm pretty sure it's true in Philly. I have friends up there, and I've spent not a little bit of time in Philly. I love that town. A lot of people who live in Baltimore who know Philadelphia look at it as an older sibling that we could model ourselves after. We've got a lot of the same basic raw ingredients. Philadelphia's done a lot more, I think, in terms of to make people's lives better, in terms of maintaining and expanding its mass transit, particularly rail and commuter rail. It's got a lively city center where people actually live.
Right.
And, you know, we're striving to have those things as well, but we have a lot in common and a lot we could learn from each other.
Well, you know, it reminds me, though, that you are a delegate. You're not the city council. You're not the mayor of Baltimore. So a lot of times people will see, like, that was a criticism against Elijah Cummings. Like, oh, you're the congressman. You should fix Baltimore. And one, I'm sure you have a good relationship with his office, and he does do a lot. And two, you don't oversee the running of the city. So how is a delegate, or in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, state representative, or in other places, a state senator or whatnot, how can you in that local office be an advocate for your city?
That's actually a really good question, and the answer is that as a state delegate, I'm a member of a body, the state legislature, that has 190 members. I have one vote in that body, but we collectively represent the interests and needs of over 6 million people. So as a state legislator, my first constitutional duty is to make sure that we pass annually a balanced state budget. So that is how I serve all of the people of Maryland, by lending my vote to ensure that our public resources are spent in a way that's balanced. And my one of my other constitutional duties is to make sure that the state of Maryland provides a quality education for all of Maryland's children, no matter what their zip code or their genetic code. That's a duty that goes beyond the boundaries of the city. However, as a state delegate, I live in Baltimore. I live in a neighborhood. And, you know, like Philadelphia, we are a city of neighborhoods.
Right.
And my everyday life is affected by conditions in the city. So I have, obviously, I mean, you know, I have a stake in how, in the conditions of the city, how life is, how people are able to survive and thrive. I can use my power of office to collaborate with my city council colleagues to communicate with and support the mayor of Baltimore and the city council in their efforts to run the city and create opportunity for all. You know, one of the other things that state officials do is we go to the Capitol every year and we ask for resources to bring back to our city.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a process that involves, for example, bond initiatives, where we ask the state to basically put up collateral that we can use for projects in our jurisdictions. Last year, I and my colleagues in my legislative district brought back, I think, $11 million in bond money for initiatives just in our district here in the city. And there are several other districts in the city where those delegates and senators are bringing resources back. And we wouldn't do that without communication and collaboration with our local city council colleagues and the mayor. So we're a partnership, each having official jurisdiction over, you know, different sort of geography, but a shared interest in outcomes that serve the people of our city. The healthiest places are those where local, state, and federal officials are aligned in their values and their mission. And we're pretty darn lucky in Baltimore to have an amazing, dedicated, high integrity, genuinely caring and competent congressman like Elijah Cummings. And there are other members of our federal delegation, for that matter, Congressman John Sarbanes and Senators Van Hollen and Cardin. I can't speak for their Republican member of our federal delegation, but our Democratic members are uniformly awesome. We are incredibly lucky. And at the city level, we have a crop of really talented, young, highly educated new city council members who are doing great things. And we have, at the moment, you guys may have heard, we had a little bit of turnover in the mayor's office here in Baltimore City this year. But we have right now a mayor who was a former city council president, Mayor Jack Young, who has a long track record of service to this city. And so we're in really incredibly good hands. A lot of work to do, great people helping us at the state level do what needs to be done.
Well, you know, you make some really good points about how governing is up and down the ladder. You know, it is a collaboration. I'm a borough council member. I meet with my state representative a lot, Tim Briggs. If you're listening, find my podcast with Tim Briggs in the past episodes. Or we go to our congresswoman, Madeline Dean, to ask for funding for big projects. Or we'll go to the senator and say this is a problem with Senator Casey or Senator Toomey even. Or we might go to the governor's office. And we might go to, like, other smaller offices or county offices. So you're right, government is a collaboration, and no one person is solely responsible for any one street. And it uh-huh. works a lot better, just like in sports, if everyone's playing together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a team effort, no doubt about it. But a lot of people don't understand the role of their state legislatures, mm-hmm. and that is a mistake. It's one of the reasons why we've ended up in this country in a situation where, how do I put this? In a situation where about 30 states are controlled by a single party, certain state legislatures are controlled by a single party. That's because people took their eye off the ball.
Right.
And I think I should just be transparent and just say the Democratic Party took its eye off the ball and lost more than half of our state legislatures. A lot of state and county elected offices are now monopolized and gerrymandered into hands of one single party, which is the Republican Party. And the reality is, the quality of everyday life for the average American is determined by decisions made at the state and local level, not by whoever's in the White House. Although the wrong person in the White House can do a lot of damage, which we can see every day. But, you know, elections matter, and who you elect to create policy and spend your public resources at the state and local level really, really matters. We're in a situation right now in Maryland where registered Democrats outnumber registered Republicans 2-1. But we have a Republican governor who has made lots of decisions over his tenure in office that make clear that he values certain parts of Maryland more than he values others. Our governor, despite the fact that the legislature passed bipartisan budget legislation, passed spending measures in a bipartisan fashion, the governor decided not to release almost $200 million of funds. A lot of that, $200 million, was going to come directly to Baltimore City.
Wow.
And so, yeah, funding for schools, funding for healthcare, funding for a number of valuable initiatives, we've been denied because of the whim. Really, this is just a whimsical, capricious, reckless sort of action by the chief executive of the state, who's empowered to make decisions like that, withholding funds that have already been approved by the legislature. You know, but folks here allowed set the situation up by electing this particular governor, and so it's, I guess I say all that to emphasize the importance of local, state and local elections. In my day-to-day work, I try to remind people that your state legislature is the only thing between you and chaos. So, you know, we do our best. We really do our best, and it matters who you choose to represent you at the state level.
It does, and it also matters who's in the majority, correct?
It does, but again, Maryland's 2-1 registered Democrats, and somehow we are in for a two-term Republican governor who's, frankly, made decisions that seem quite hostile to the interests of Baltimore City and other municipalities that are centers for economic vitality, education, culture, and racial diversity. So, you know, there are patterns of decisions that just seem not quite in the interests of the majority of people who live in Maryland, and yet somehow the election speaks for itself. So to that extent, your state senators and delegates can stand up for you in an environment that we have, where the governor is from a different party than the majority of Marylanders, and certainly from a different party than the vast majority of Baltimoreans, then that's our job, to stand in the breach. And you have to be a bit fearless, a bit clever, and certainly tireless to stand in a balance in a situation like that. And I think in Baltimore City overall, we try to do that.
Well, yeah, I was talking to another person in an upcoming episode that'll be launched soon, Heather Edelson from Minnesota. I think they flipped the state that house of legislature in Minnesota, the state house. And because she's in the majority, she can control committee chairs. She can control things that, so her voice is amplified. And I think that people, especially like in here in Pennsylvania, there's a lot of so-called moderate Republicans who, you know, I've met them, they're nice people, but, you know, your vote makes a difference in terms of who's not just who your representative, but who is your committee chair, who's in charge of this committee, who's standing up for these issues and those issues, even if you never voted for that person, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, the ramifications of your vote are so broad and so profound. I understand reasons for apathy, and I certainly understand the impact of voter suppression, but for someone whose vote's not suppressed, someone who's got, you know, very few obstacles to get to the ballot, I am astonished by a person with those opportunities to participate in civic life who chooses not to. It's so important. Give you an example. Given the situation in Washington, D.C., where we have a man in the White House, a person in the White House who's made clear his contempt and hatred for people of color, for women, for immigrants, it's more important than ever that in Maryland, our state legislature passes laws to protect people that man is trying to attack. In Maryland, we've passed, in the 2 years that since I became a delegate, we've passed legislation, for example, to protect Planned Parenthood funding. There are forces arrayed at the national level that are determined to deny women reproductive and sexual rights. In Maryland, we passed a law to protect Planned Parenthood funding, to expand access to contraception. Maryland actually has in its constitution enshrined the right for women to choose abortion if they need to. And if we didn't have that, we would be a lot more at risk from the attacks, federal attacks, than we are. And so, I'm sorry, did I say abortion? I meant the right to contraception. We've enshrined the right to contraception. And so, there was talk about issuing a referendum to put abortion in the Constitution, but that hasn't gone anywhere for the moment. But these are the kinds of things that we have to do.
And unfortunately, those things are under attack on a federal level, and you may not be able to control who is in charge of Congress, though you can with your vote, but you can certainly have a very good way of controlling your state legislature. So that's why people should vote. Now that you're in office, you've seen the power of what you can do to be an advocate. Why should more people run for office, whether it's in Maryland or anywhere else, whether it's for a delegate or any other kind of position?
Well, I think there are a lot of ways to be involved in shaping the day-to-day life of your own community and helping to direct the future of our country. There's so many different ways to do that. You do not have to run for office to have a profound and lasting impact on quality of life. However, given the fact that the majority of state legislatures in this country are controlled by a single party, the Republican Party, I think it behooves everyone to find a way to push for better balance. That's an imbalanced situation. Mm-hmm. It's not healthy for our states. It's definitely not healthy for our democracy.
And if you want government to do good things, make sure the government is run by people who believe that government can do good things. If you have people in office that think government is a terrible thing, they're not going to be there for you to help out in a lot of matters.
Well, no. I mean, there are people in elected office. I actually know a couple of people in the Maryland State Legislature who believe that government is an evil, and they ran for office precisely and specifically to undermine the ability of government to serve the interests of people. I mean, it's hard to believe, but there are nihilists in every corner of society. There are people who'd rather throw a bomb than plant a tree at every level. And unfortunately, if you're not paying attention, you cast your ballot for someone like that, you've actually undermined your own ability to survive. And there's too much at stake right now. There are too many forces of destruction arrayed against everyday working people, against women, against African Americans, Latinx, Asians, immigrants, refugees, asylees, LGBTQ, animals, the planet. I mean, there are so many forces of destruction empowered right now. Everyone of goodwill should find a way to protect each other, and running for office can be that. Now, for some people, I'd say that since I came in as an appointee originally, and this was an interesting process in Maryland, when there is a vacancy at the state level, there is an appointment process that is a public process and that is managed by the party who represents the seat that was just vacated. So if a Republican held a certain senator delegate seat, Republican Party would be responsible to choose a replacement to serve out that term.
Right.
In my case, Baltimore City is predominantly Democratic city, and the previous delegate was a Democrat. So I was chosen by our local Democratic Party to fill the seat of the delegate who retired. And then, of course, I ran for office and won decisively in November 2018. But there's a role for elected office. There's a role for civic engagement, civic leadership. But if you're going to run, you should run because you have a mission. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people who run for office because they can't think of anything else to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because they think having a title is glamorous because somebody told them that they should. And they have no purpose other than those flimsy and shallow rationales for running.
Right.
We don't need any more of those people. We're in an existential crisis. We need people who actually want to work and to serve. So if you're interested in standing in the breach for your fellow humans, if you're interested in working to save the planet, you can do that in elected office at any level. But where we really need people of goodwill is state and local. So I encourage people who are interested in making the world a better place to think about elected office, be ready to work really hard in a thankless environment, and a sometimes emotionally fraught and emotionally brutal environment. Be prepared to be poorly paid. I took a 50 or 60% pay cut to be a state delegate. So it's not glamorous at all. But if you love your fellow humans and you love the earth and you're watching this rolling disaster happening in Washington, D.C., but you also know that you can have an impact on your community, go for it.
Yeah, well, as I talked with another person who ran for state office, Emily Segrist, I'm looking at her picture on my computer, like, it's a war when it comes to these issues. Like, you can't, and when there's a war when it comes to healthcare, women's rights, and LGBT rights, and refugees, etc., like, if you choose to not participate, whether it's running, voting, donating, etc., volunteering, then you're choosing the side of the people who are oppressing those groups.
Yeah, that's very straightforward. It was, I think, Reverend Martin Luther King who said something like, one of the greatest ills of society, it's not the racist, it's the person who doesn't stand up to them.
Mm.
It's the person whose comfort is more important to them than the justice and survival of their neighbor. And that's the situation that we're in right now. I will never forget my experience on November 8th, 2016, when we're all watching the returns on TV and this bizarre and unprecedented pattern, unfolded on the map on our screens, and Virginia fell and Florida fell and then Wisconsin and Michigan and the terror just roiled up in me. And I will never forget that feeling of asking myself, what could I do? I understood immediately that really everyone I love and care about was going to be in danger. in a regime led by this individual. And I asked over and over, what can I do? I've been a community leader. I've been, you know, a public health professional. I've worked around the world to improve people's lives. And all of a sudden, I couldn't think of one thing, what I could possibly do to protect my neighbors and friends and family and the planet from the storm that was coming. And that was actually when, a few weeks after the election, I got a phone call informing me that the previous delegate resigned, or was retiring, rather. And I said, maybe this is that thing that I can do. Maybe this is how I can spend my energy. And yes, it involves enormous sacrifice in a lot of different ways. But if we're not here to help each other, my question is, why are we here? So I took the opportunity, and here I am. There are lots of different ways to respond to an existential call like that. And I think, like you mentioned, you know, you can, you don't have to run. You could participate in a campaign and volunteer. I did that many times over many years for lots of people I know who are now in office. You can do that. It really matters. You can also find ways to solve problems that maybe no one else has thought of. Community organizing is always a great place to begin. Get involved in something. Give it hoot about something and lend your precious life, your limited life energies to carry it out. There's nobody like you on this earth. There's no one like you in the place where you are in this moment. You feel called to serve, improve the lives of other people. You should find a way to do it.
Well, great. Well, if you're listening and you want to give a hoot, you should give a hoot, first of all. It's too important to sit back and do nothing. We encourage you, if you're in an area where they need a challenger, they need someone to run, you should run for office. Delegate Lewis, I'm glad you're a delegate, and I'm glad you've taken up the mantle, and I appreciate you being on our podcast today.
Actually, I want to say one more thing about my run.
Yeah.
I'm the first person of color to ever hold state office in the district where I serve.
Oh, wow.
I'm African-American, and my district is 60% white. It's a little bit like Ilhan Omar's district. I think her district is like 70% white. She's the first person of color, and certainly the first person not born in the U.S. But what happened in 2016 changed, it activated a lot of people, and it helped us to see that we have allies and partners who need to step up. We need to support that person who's going to help you. May not look or sound like you. That's another lesson of this moment, and I really encourage people to be open and to put our values and our vision of a beautiful and fair and democratic world in place by running and working.
Well, great. We need more diversity of ideas and backgrounds and perspectives. And we need to challenge the notion that some people can and can't win in different areas. The only way we can win, the only way you can win if you're listening, is to run and to get involved. Thank you, Delegate Lewis, for being involved. And good luck to Baltimore, one of the best cities on the planet.
Thanks so much, Tony, and thanks for what you're doing. It's really important and valuable.
Great. If you're listening, make sure to subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast player and on Podbean. Share this and look for some of the past episodes and some future episodes coming up that I know you'll like. Thank you again, Delegate Lewis.
All right, Tony. Bye now.